Roger Clark. This recording is part of the oral history project carried out by the Suffolk Horse Society in 2013, with advice from Cambridge Community Heritage and a generous grant from the Heritage Lotteries Fund. In the recording, you will hear the voice of Mr. Roger Clark describing his memories of the Suffolk Punch Heavy Horse. Roger is a farrier and expert on Suffolk Punch horses who lives at Stoke-by-Nayland. The recording was made by Leslie Dolphin, the well-known presenter from BBC Radio Suffolk. The date of the recording was the 26th of November 2013, and it was carried out at BBC Radio Suffolk in Ipswich. The duration of the recording is about 33 minutes.
My guest with us today, very well known across the county, Suffolk horseman and farrier, and you probably saw Roger Clark ploughing with his horses on Countryfile just over a week ago. Roger's a Suffolk boy, says he's forged the path in life that he wanted and has worked with horses and other animals all his life. As well as his main job of being a farrier, he shoes horses and dealing with horses' foot problems. He rents a farm where he likes to do traditional farming. And I think he hunts every Sunday with his bloodhounds. Do you still go out with the hounds?
Every Sunday.
Every Sunday. They're beautiful as well. If you come and see you, there they are howling away, aren't they? So tell me, should we start at the beginning then? Do you think that's a good place to start?
I think that's as good a place to start as any, Leslie.
Okie dokie, Saxmundham as well.
Saxmundham.
Yeah.
And I think going back, my first memory is riding on the back of my mother's bike. I don't even know whether health and safety allows it now, but...
It's right, I was asking you not to tap your fingers, because sadly we can all hear it. Go on.
And
on the back of your mum's bike?
My back, with a little seat, clutching a brush, and we went over to Henry Wisby over at Sternfield, who was a great family friend, and they were horse dealers and horse slaughterers and had been for generations, to pick up my first pony. And that was a grey, and that was where I got my great... fear of water, because this pony was a good pony to ride, but it was almost very difficult to catch. And Uncle Bill, who always looked after sisters and cousins' ponies and so forth, it used to take him and Mum about three quarters of an hour to catch it, so I had about 15 minutes riding on it. But however, poking about at a pond there, like small boys do, I fell in and nearly drowned.
How old were you then?
About three or four.
Can you remember it?
Yeah, I can remember that clearly. Yeah, I have two memories really. That going to pick the pony up and going down to Polperro with my parents and being rowed out across the bay, sitting on my father's lap. Father's still alive. We share the same birthday, April 4th.
And he's going to be 97.
He'll be 97, and I should be 67.
That's wonderful.
I'm very proud of my father. You know, when we realised people like him, who was a Dunkirk veteran. Yeah. Went right through the war, and if it wasn't for people again, we wouldn't be here now, would we?
Does he live in Suffolk? Or?
No. Unfortunately, he lost his housekeeper, Joyce, and he's very comfortably off at Canterbury House near Hadley, near me.
So he is in Suffolk,
So he is still in Suffolk.
So he could even be listening.
Hopefully he is.
Hopefully the whole of is it Hadley House he's in? Come on, put all the radios on as well.
Yeah, so that... And really, I suppose that was where my interest in horses, you know, was forged. And if you'll excuse the pun, and I was very fortunate to go to Fairfield Preparatory School, which one was rather cocooned there, if you see what I mean, a little bit out of the outside world, as it were, and having failed my 11+, because... I really wanted to be a vet. That was the outcome.
Because your mum, wasn't your mum involved in a vet?
Yeah, well, grandfather, actually, interestingly enough, was practising as a horse doctor, age 20, in Crab Street in Ipswich. So, you know, it's...
It's all in the family.
All in the family, and has been for generations.
And how much of his stuff will have been scientific horse doctoring, and how much the old traditional stuff?
I think nearly all old traditional stuff. Mm. And I have to say, and I mean, I have a fair bit to do with vets today, because... I act as a farry consultant to the Ryder Davis Partnership. Now, you know, I do say to some of these young vets, you know, you've got to go back to some of these old things. You know, you're losing touch with reality. And whilst, you know, it's all very well, we have these scanners and all things like that, but, you know, you've still got to use your eyes, your hands and your ears.
Mm. So you didn't pass your 11 plus. So did that rather?
I did, because I was then thrown into secondary modern.
I went to a secondary modern, but all the best people do, Roger.
You can imagine a small boy in shorts coming away.
So you'd
from
been
a
to a bit of a bit of a posh school,
yeah, and then being thrown in at the deep end. But in point of fact, I was responsible for getting the head boy into fairly serious trouble, because Stephen Thompson was head boy, and again, we'd been great friends. His grandfather actually taught me to braid up, and we used to drive a pony over to grandfather's, and we used to take the pony out and tie it up in the garden, and we always had a boiled egg on a slice of toast, then we would have a braiding demonstration. I saw him, and 11 o'clock broke. I said, do you fancy a trip out this afternoon? He said, what do you want to do? I said, take the cob over to Stanley Alvin's for a set of shoes. Do you want to come? We said, we'll get caught. I said, no, we won't. I said, there's only games this afternoon. We can work the way through. So anyway, lunchtime came. We out the back of the bike sheds, over the chain link fence netting, and I had a pony there, and we caught her. Put her in the trap, and we were going up the A12 like two good ones were, full trot. And the car, slowed down as we went past. And, always being taught good manners to other road users, I acknowledged it, not realising it was the maths teacher. So, anyway, Stephen said, we're going to be in trouble. This was a Thursday. You're going to be in trouble tomorrow. I said, you might be, but I'm not. Why? I said, I shan't come to school. I said, I'll come in Monday. That'll all be blown over. But that wasn't.
Yeah. Did you get into it?
Yeah, like that was all right till the end of the assembly. The headmaster said, would Clark please come to my office? So I went there, and he was there drinking a cup of tea and eating a digestive biscuit. So anyway, he told me of my bad ways, leading students astray and so forth. And he said, and what are you going to do when you leave school, Clark? So I said, so that'll undoubtedly be something to do with horses. And he choked over his digestive biscuit. But I don't know, they've always done me well.
And have throughout your life, so even while you were at school, you always have had horses?
Always had horses. Yeah. And you see, don't forget, people say to me, when did you go back to using horses? I've never gone back to using horses. We had horses on Saxmundham Urban District Council, carted the refuse right up till 1968. And you see, Chris Cousins, who was carter, another one of my great mentors. And you have to realise, I've been very, very lucky over my life, because whatever I wanted to do, there's always been somebody there to guide you in the right direction. Always have a choice. You're either a brick or a sponge. I like to think I'm a sponge.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's down to you as well, that there are people there that you've listened to as well.
Well, I think so, yeah. Yeah, I remember when we had a few Suffolk sheep, Charlie Peck, who was, he was the man as far as a shepherd went with John Jiggins and so forth with sheep. And he used to come and trim one or two out and so forth. And he was an old man. I said, Charlie, why do you come here? Well, he said, if I tell you to do something, he said, I'd come back, that's done. He said, people ring me up, Charlie, what have I got to do about this? What have I got to do about that? He said, you tell them. They'll ask six other people and do what they think anyway. So
that might describe the state of our country, do you think, at the moment?
But I've been very lucky. Whatever I've wanted to do, there's always been somebody there to guide you in the right direction.
So what did you do when you left school?
Horses.
Because you needed to earn
I used to break a few in and so forth. And my mother made me a member of the Suffolk Horse Society in 1964. And just show how things were different then, I was the only new member that year. And I bought a Suffolk mare off the late George Colson at Roehedge Farm at Long Melford called Grovemeyer Sotus. But she was called Sparky for short, and when I got home, I realised why she was called Sparky, because she'd kick a town down. But anyway, I managed to use her, and George Colson offered me a job. And at that time, to be offered a job on a farm who not only showed Suffolk horses, but worked six horses regularly on the farm properly. I'm talking about, you know, they were fed at 5 a.m, turned out 7:30, and, you know, that was a chance never to be missed. And I was very fortunate there, because that's when really my shoeing, not shoeing career, but my real interest, because I'd always been interested, even when I took a pony at the blacksmiths, I could you know, pull the shoes off and clinch up and things like that. But I was very fortunate to be befriended by Les Finch, who was the man at that time of day for shoeing Suffolk horses.
And has that, in a way, as a farrier, has that been your bread and butter? So that
you've yes, always has been.
So you've been able to look after the horse, do the other bits?
Yeah. It's enabled me to do what I want to do.
And have you, is it, when did Suffolk horses sort of become part of your life? Because
about then, I suppose. But you see, you know, people do tend to romanticise about this a bit. But you know, you have to realise you'd go to Beckles horse sale in October, and might be 100-120 cart horses out. 95-97 of them would all go off to kill. You see, off to slaughter. And I think the most poignant thing that I can ever remember was being in Beckles sale yard, and an old man came in riding astride a Persian mare with a foal running behind. And that really summed it up. You know, an old man finishing his time and the horse finishing its time. But, you know, as we say, even the Suffolk Horse Society nearly folded up. Shire Horse Society nearly folded up because, you know, suddenly there was, you know, there was no interest.
Everyone and got then, tractors.
Yeah. And see, don't forget, the majority of the people who used horses sort of during the war and after the war would all been elderly people. There's very few younger men coming into it, you know, because, you know, they'd rather sit on a tractor than...
Well, it's the modern technology. Exciting,
absolutely.
Wasn't it,
yeah,
at the time? Yeah.
But, you know, having said that, Leslie, you know, we say about modernisation and so forth, I think in my lifetime, I think the last, 5 to 10 years had been the biggest advancement that we will ever see in agricultural machinery. You know, I thought the other day, looking at my window at home, and our good neighbours, the Rixes, I mean, they farm a lot of land around us, and there was a field there that once was a farm on its own, you know, all the hedges had been pulled out, field of sugar beet, and there was this massive beet harvester in there, harvesting sugar beet, plough come up behind, combination drill and so forth, and the whole field was lifted, drilled and ploughed in 24 hours. When I went to George Colson's, my first job there, we had a single row Peter Stan and beet harvester and three horses and tumbles. And we chucked every beet into a 7-ton Ford trailer lorry. But we still got it off.
Didn't people have to go out and hoe beet as well? Didn't
you chop them out, yeah.
I vaguely remember that as well. Yeah. Thank goodness I never did that.
You know, that's all precision drilled now, you see.
Guest with us on the programme today, I would say on the sofa, but he rejected the sofa, is at Roger Clark. It's too low, isn't it? And you've heard it's not comfy, I guess.
Yeah, I'd rather sit high.
Yeah, so because I have to say at my age, I'm starting to think if I sit too low, I'll never get up again.
Same with me.
And we've got at least to the age of 20. Roger is a farrier, Suffolk horseman, rents a farm where he farms the traditional way, helped Fall Heine. You've seen him on television, past president, Suffolk Horse Society, fellow of the Worshipful Company of Farriers, judges various horses, don't you, as well? So
horses and cattle.
Yeah, quite a long list. So I had got to about the age of 20, but you want me to go back to the age of 15?
Well, yeah, because I think that was another important part in my career, because parents were always very supportive. And I read in the Horse and Hound that Captain James Hewitt, who had the Harrier coach down at Woburn, would take pupils in for driving tuition. Well, having driven a single horse and so forth, I thought that would be quite a feat to go up to a pair and a team. So you've always got to be ambitious, you know, you always got to think ahead. So anyway, we went down there, and my 2 or 3 days down there ended up a fortnight. And I used to go back quite regularly in drive, because that was a coach that took people around Woburn Park when it was a deer park rather than just a, rather than it is now, which I think is more a wildlife thing. And I mean, it was marvellous experience where, you know, you've got a coach loaded with full load on top and inside as well, and a steep hill to come down and springing a hill upwards. And I was traditionally sworn in at Highgate, which was once you'd sort of pass your test as a coachman, you were sworn in at Highgate never to take small ale and never kiss a maid when you can kiss a mistress. So, you know, I suppose that holds you in good stead.
I hope you stuck to all these things, of course, as well, Roger. And that was a coach and four, wasn't it? So, like the old Royal Mail coach.
You know, all the success we've ever had with Suffolk teams, and I mean, I think the greatest accolade possibly in my career was winning the four-horse team championship at the Royal Show 3 years in succession with a team of Suffolk horses, and all with Shire men judging. But they could go. And, you know, I like to put it down to the fact that I'd been taught to drive properly. Mm. And you could get them. And the Paul's wagon that we horsed at that time was down at the Suffolk Punch Trust now. And I had a great thrill last year at the Suffolk Show, and where I was allowed to drive four of their horses on the wagon, because that was 50 years since I first drove a horse at the Suffolk Show.
Wow.
And that was in the private driving class. And Mother said, "Old Hatches from Framlingham can take you, but I'm not paying them to be there all day. You'll have to make your own way back." So Stephen Thompson, again, my friend who I got into
trouble. This is 50 years ago we're talking about that, yeah.
So, anyway, we did the class, had a look round the show, put the pony in the trap and drove back from Ipswich to Saxmundham. And pulled in past Saxmundham post office at 8:10. Yeah. And, but, you know, all, I wouldn't want to do it now with the traffic.
Oh, dare I do? You wouldn't dare, would you?
No, you wouldn't dare now. So, you know, that was, you know, that was quite a thrill being, as I felt, you know, reunited with an old friend, you know, picking up the reins and getting up on the seat of the wagon again.
Do you not do, do you do much driving these days?
Yeah, but we do with, Fiona, my wife, she's got a pair of Roan Welsh cobs that we drive tandem in a vehicle. And that was quite interesting because one of my neighbours who farms, I saw him at Hadley's show. He said, "Do you want an old trap?" I said, "Well, come and have a look at it." And he'd taken over this farm, and they were half pulling the barn down, and behind the brick wall was this trap, which was sort of like a Norfolk cart. And anyway, I had a deal with them. That was as sound as a bell. All the woodwork was really good. The only thing that was wrong with it was the rubbers on the wheels had perished. So John Tiplady at Marlsham, he re-rubbered them for us. And Eric Hazel at Boxford, he cleaned it all down, repainted it and lined it up. And we discovered, looking at the hubcaps, that was built by J.R. Kent at Ipswich. And looking through an old Suffolk directory, we've got 1916, they've got a half-page advert. So, you know, it's amazing what bits of history there are about.
And how it lasts as well, when it was made in those days as well.
So, and I'm very fortunate because my old friend John Parker up at Wingfield, he'll give me a ring sometimes and say, "I've got some fresh horses in, come up and drive them, see what you think." And you know, it's great fun because you never know what's going to be in front of you. Mm. So, you know, you just keep your hand in and keep your eye in.
Tell me about the farrier side of things, how that's developed. Because recently you were over in Massachusetts in America at a 3-day conference, weren't you?
Yeah, I was asked to go over there I think I had to give 4 papers on lameness and shoeing of draft horses, because, you know, heavy horses are quite a big thing out in the States. And it was absolutely fascinating because all around Massachusetts, there's places like Ipswich, Boxford and all, you know, because obviously that was where most of the original inhabitants came from. And so the places were named after them. But I was pleased to get home.
I was going to say, but not bad for a boy who failed his 11 plus.
No, not too bad. Not too bad. But I'm off to Northern Ireland on Thursday, with my learned friend, Mr. Ryder Davis, and we will be doing the farrier examinations at Enniskillen College, which we've done for the past, well, I don't know, 10 or 15 years, I suppose.
Is this something that's sort of made a return? And you obviously absorbed your knowledge through practising, did you, over the years?
Yeah. It's like everything else is surprising what you can do if you put your mind to it, but you just got to have that little bit of fire in your belly to want to do it. And I know when I took my fellowship, I used to go over to the late Hector Moore's two nights a week, and we used to practice shoemaking. And the late Ken Caban, he's a good veterinary surgeon, we used to have a evening with him every fortnight, you know, on physiology and various, you know, complaints and so forth. But there again, I've been lucky enough to be associated with a lot of good veterinary surgeons.
At Trinity Park, they've set up a sort of a place to get for
oh, it's a good, yeah, London, big shoeing competition there now. Yeah. But unfortunately, you know, a shoeing competition is not like everyday work. You know, a shoeing competition is usually won by people who can copy what the judge wants. But like when we do a lameness clinic at Ryder Davis's, you know, you're working with a vet for the benefit of the horse.
So the shoe is, you would shape the shoe to suit that.
Not
that
only
horse's
that,
feet.
It's how the foot is balanced and how the horse goes. You know, people say about shoeing horses, you don't shoe feet, you shoe the whole horse.
So you've learned over the years by looking at the way it walks
moves As Harold Smart said to me, you've got to study it a bit.
So Ted, I know when you go and give your talks that you sort of have a chronological order, do you, for your talks? But when did you actually get your own farm and start to rent that?
Well, I've been a tenant with the Rowley family since 1969. And against the late Sir Joshua Rowley was very supportive. And in fact, it was through him where we are able to hunt some of the marvellous estates we do, you know, throughout Suffolk and Essex.
So you were a farrier at this stage, were you? But you also wanted a farm where you could do your traditional
farming? Yeah, it's you know, I think when you talk about, you know, horsemen and so forth, I think a farm horseman was fairly unique because, don't forget, he could not only use horses, he knew how to look after horses, but he could do the work as well. He's what we could call, he could take the work and leave it. And I know Jim Young, who was a great friend, who was down in Corringham, down in Essex. I mean, Jim was a farmer, but Jim would probably be one of the best horsemen that I knew. You know, horses always went well for him. And, you know, he's ploughing or drilling or anything like that. You know, that was a level that you tried to live up to.
So is that what you wanted to do on your farm?
Yeah,
is
yeah,
that the idea?
But it gradually, you know, it gradually evolved. But the biggest problem is now, you see, getting help. And, you know, I do a little now, but, see, I don't get about quite as well as I used to be able to. And you know, as you get older, which I will have to remind your viewers, has no benefits to it whatsoever.
What, getting older? Oh, but you must be wiser.
Yeah. And, that's always been the, not only using the horses, but what I call, you know, using the horses properly.
So take me through how the farm developed then, because, I mean, Paul Heine you worked with, didn't you? You've done other bits on telly. How did you become known as this Suffolk horseman?
Well, I don't know, really. Always shown, I think. And whatever anybody says, the show ring is the best shop window you can have because that's where you get recognised. And been fortunate to have a lot of good horses over the years. And I know when George Colson died, he had a very, very good stallion there, which he reckoned was the best horse he ever bred, called Roehedge Count II. And he was in the auction, and the late Alf Adams came to me because we always shod the Adams horses down at Felixstowe, who were very prominent Suffolk horse exhibitors. Alf came to me and said, you want to buy that horse, boy? I've always been boy to everybody. So I said, God, Alf, I'd never afford that. You don't worry about that. He said, I'll pay for that. He said, you pay me back when you can. But there was a lot of talk that Americans had come over to buy it and so forth, and the auctioneer was a bit too clever, and he knocked it down for himself. So George Colson's brother Dick came to me afterwards. He said, do you want that horse, boy? So he said, well, sold is it then? He said, auctioneer's made her. So,
a bit of a mistake.
Yeah, so, you know, and I think that was the horse what put Whalen's Farm on the map.
Tell us all about the horse, then.
Well, I mean, he was... A lot of people said he was a bit too modern for a Suffolk, but he was a big, powerful, quality horse and with a great character. And in fact, I've never followed football, but he led the victorious Ipswich Town round their stadium when they won the cup.
Really?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. And he represented the Queen's link with East Anglia at her Silver Jubilee. So, yeah, he was an extraordinary one. He got struck by lightning.
Did it kill him?
No, it didn't. And this is something they could never make out because they sent Bloods up to Newmarket and so forth. And they said, when did the horse die? So they said, well, he's still alive. And they came down to see him. But it was just like somebody who'd had a massive stroke. And, we had him put down.
Oh, bless him. Mm. So can you remember all your horses?
I remember most of them. You know, you look through the photographs and so forth, and you think this one and that one. But there's been some memorable ones.
Which was the first Suffolk Punch that you owned?
Well, this Grove Marsh.
That was that one, then. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And what about some of the other memorable ones, then?
Yeah. Well, the horse we got now, Block Fen Jester. He was bred by Jeff Briscoe in up in the Fens. And we were ploughing the Suffolk Horse Society plough match at Brunning's Farm at Nayland. And besides ploughing, one or two horses come along and, do a bit of harrowing and that sort of thing. And got this foal tied up on the lorry. So he said, do you want this foal? I said, no. He said, well, can you do me a favour? Can you take it? I said, well, we'll take it. Fiona went home and got the trailer and a pony, and he put this foal in. And he was about home, came 3-year-old, and he was with sort of four others, and they gradually got sold off, and he was one of the last ones left. And I thought, I don't know, I'll better get some harness on you and make a start. And he was a bit funny with his bit, and we discovered he'd got what we call a wolf's tooth, which is just in front of the molars, and that just can cause a bit of discomfort. So we had that out, and then there was no good thinking about him while he was sore, so out he went again. He came up again in the autumn and had the harness on again, got him long reining about and so forth, and had him on the plough with old Laurel Keepsake. That she was a good mare to put a youngster with because she'd hold him, as we say. And Peter Morehouse was raising money in Dedham for the new doctor's surgery, and he wanted a pair of horses over at his plough. And, well, we took them over there, and everybody wanted to have a go at a sort of pound around. And by the time the afternoon was over, this horse was well and truly broken in. So he went to the Suffolk Horse Society plough match a fortnight later, and they won the best working pair. They won the ploughing. And the late Richard Gowan was judging, and he gave him the prize for the horse that he would most like to take home.
Wow.
So I thought, well, he must think more of him than what I do. So anyway, he went to Woodridge next year, and he was supreme champion.
Amazing.
Mm, I think he was only beaten once in his whole career, and that was for a judge who had just had his cataracts done. So I just forgive him for that.
We're running out of time. Tell me about the Bloodhounds, because you
Oh, I always wanted to be a huntsman.
Did
right
you?
From a small boy, right from when we used to go down to the New Forest. And again, it was quite an extraordinary thing. I spent nearly all the time with Jack Slightham at the Buckhound Kennels, and I did actually on holiday with my parents. And obviously, you see, that sowed the scene. I thought, well, I don't know if I have two or three years at this, that'll get out of my system. But 25 years later, that still hasn't.
And how many bloodhounds have you got?
Oh, we've got, I think we've got, with the puppies, I think we've got 20 couple, which is, but there'd be about 13 to 14 couple, because you always count them in couples, you see.
Right, okay.
And Fiona, my wife, and Holly Farrer, they do the sort of day-to-day exercise and so forth. And, you know, they are great fun. And those who of your listeners who don't know, they hunt what we call a clean boot. That is to say, they hunt the natural scent of a human being.
Who's running fast.
Yeah. People say, oh, they're drag hounds. They're not. That is what they're bred for. And the extraordinary thing with them is, you know, they're quite happy to do it with no reward at the end.
So before when you could fox hunt, did you fox hunt?
Oh, yeah, I'd had 3 years with the Essex and Suffolk. Yeah. And it's always an emotive subject, but, you know, I'm always quite amused. You see these marvellous wildlife programmes and you'll see a pack of hunting dogs pull a wildebeest calf down or a zebra foal down, which is three or four times the size of them. You know, people say, oh, isn't nature wonderful? Put a man on a scarlet coat on a horse and suddenly it's barbaric. So, you know, you take your pick.
So you've obviously debated it a few times.
Yeah, hundreds of times. But now the bloodhounds are great fun. And people say to me, oh, you know, do you make a fuss of them when they're successful and so forth? And I just say, well, you know, we have a few words and they smile a lot and that's it.
And I guess, although you have to be practical because you're a farmer as well, you've loved your horses and your dogs.
Oh, yes. Been there my whole life.
Still are.
Mm.
Tell me about some of the telly, because you helped Paul Heinian at the deep end.
Yeah,
really,
I mean,
Paul
actually, I have to say, was a great ambassador for the Suffolk horse, and it's always been a little bit of a disappointment to me because, you know, we had a really good revival with, you know, horses in general working and so forth. And I thought, right, you know, we're now really on, you know, getting going again, and then you see you just want a little bit of recession and so forth, and things drop back. But, you know, We must get younger people interested, and you know, I always have great admiration for Tracy Pettit down at the Trust. Mm. I mean,
It's a great story, isn't it, that for a girl to come in and
absolutely.
Do this as well, don't you think? Because
I mean,
there weren't women involved before, all the horsemen, weren't they?
Yeah, but you see, Jenny Caldwell broke that mould, who worked for Charlie Saunders, and I mean, Jenny looked after up to 30 Suffolk horses, and she did all the showing for Charlie, you know, single, pair, four, six horse teams. But again, she had some good help. Makes all the difference.
Mm. Can you think of anything better than being out with those Suffolk Punch horses? Probably can these days, sitting in the pub, maybe.
No, I don't drink. I'll have a port at the meet, and that's my lot, so I can, you know, I can truthfully say, I've never taken a small ale.
The future of the Suffolk horse, is it a worry still? Do you think?
No, I think, you know, and see, again, we're very lucky because the Suffolk horse is now in the hands of enthusiasts who want to keep them. They don't have to keep them. And even with the horse, you know, temperament has got to be the key factor today, because you don't have to use them and you haven't got the amount of people with the skill to manage these difficult horses. And, you know, if you look through history, it's surprising, you know, like with stallions and so forth, the amount of horses that killed the leaders. You know, they, you know, and I think the biggest myth about this whole thing, and I know people will argue with me, about the, you know, this thing they've given us, gentle giants. They are big, powerful animals, and if they're not handled correctly, it's like a pack of hounds or anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you have got to be the governor, and as simple as that. And, you know, you get one of a big horse like that run away or get out of control, it is frightening.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. We've run out of time. I shall just book a space in about 6 months' time, because I'm feeling we could get you back several times with loads more stories. Roger, thank you.
Well, thank you for inviting me.